David Edwards was targeted and put on the fast track of abuse, control, and manipulation by Sharon, who bled him dry financially and physically. In 1 year, he went from a single, successful partner in a law firm to a thin, disheveled, and abused married man, murdered just 2 months after the wedding.
This podcast contains adult themes, language, and violence. It is not suited to all audiences and may be triggering to some. In many cases, the names and details within these episodes have been changed to protect privacy. Opinions expressed by guests of the show do not necessarily reflect those of the podcast or its producers.
Welcome to Isolated, a podcast about male victims of domestic abuse and control, as well as those suffering as a result of parent alienation syndrome. We are not therapists or experts in this field, but seek to bring these issues to light and provide awareness of early warning signs of abusive behavior and resources for help.
Hello, ISOs. I'm Navi Carpenter.
And I'm Chela. Thanks for joining us today. We'd like to start this episode by asking for your help. Please share this podcast with your friends and family. More awareness around this subject is needed, and we seem to be one of the few people talking about it, especially here in the United States. So please help us pave the way to an even wider conversation. We would really appreciate it.
So much. Anne commented on our Facebook page saying, quote, "I will definitely be listening to this podcast. There are so many men being subjected to domestic abuse in the form of control, guilt tripping, and physical violence. It needs to be spoken about and acknowledged," end quote. And to that, we say amen. Thank you for getting it, Anne. It's not just about listening to true crime for entertainment or to endure your commute. It's about spreading the word that men, too, are abused, need to be believed, and need resources that cater to them specifically. So let's jump into the episode. In the year 2000, Sharon Manser, a 27-year-old single mother, filed charges against her former partner, John Pritchard, for assaulting her. John retained the services of a defense attorney named David Edwards. During the trial, David had to cross-examine Sharon, who portrayed herself as a domestic violence victim. John Pritchard was acquitted of all charges and found to be innocent, but Sharon, having found Edwards to be a handsome and credible lawyer, went to see him after the trial to ask advice about a dispute with a neighbor. Ever the opportunist, Sharon was thrilled when in June 2014, David sent her a friend request on Facebook. David was quite smitten with her, and she was impressed that David was a partner at Stanley H. Cross & Company law firm. She loved the idea of dating a criminal defense attorney, the status, the money. By all accounts, both were heavy drinkers who liked to tie one on. And as we know, alcohol can bring out the monster in some people. The two started dating. And in 2015, David Edwards, then 51 years old and living in Lancashire, England, married Sharon, then age 42. They married in Las Vegas. At the wedding, Sharon wore a white sleeveless dress and held a bouquet of lilies. Her blonde updo was held in place by a crystal tiara as she said, quote, "1 year ago today, you entered my life, and I can honestly say you turned it upside down and swept me off my feet. You have shown me what true love is. You have seen me at my best, and you have seen me at my worst, just like I have seen you at your best and worst. Today, on June 28th, 2015, all our lives start, and I can't wait for the amazing journey," end quote. David wore a black suit with a black eye to match. Someone, perhaps David, perhaps Sharon, had attempted to cover the bruise with makeup, but wedding photos did not lie, and the black eye was in evidence. 2 months later, David was dead.
Wow. In most of the episodes we've done, the abuse starts after the women ropes her target in.
I know.
The women are all sweetness and light during the courtship and engagement. It doesn't sound like Sharon could wait that long.
It's fascinating that she could have known him all of 10 months and there was never a love bubble. She was abusing him from the get-go. Why on earth would he stay with her, much less marry her? I guess we'll just never know. And it's not her first experience in being the abusive partner. In 2004, she attacked her lover with a punch to the side of his face and bit him in the forearm. Sharon, it turns out, had previous convictions and police reports relating to domestic abuse.
When I met my husband, it never entered my mind to see if he had a rap sheet.
So I know.
Maybe that should be something you do when you get into a relationship.
You might check their Facebook page, but a rap sheet, no.
Find out if the person you're interested in dating has a criminal record or history of violence. But how would you go about doing that?
I was thinking the same thing. So I was kind of looking around on the internet. And it turns out you can go to www.putinyourstate. So we're in California. So www.california.staterecords.org. And for only $14.95 for 1 month of unlimited access, you can get the goods on anyone. You just enter a name and the city they live in. I tried it with my brother's wife's name and it spits out a report you can download. It includes arrests, warrants, criminal records, police records, probation and parole records, bankruptcies, DUIs, civil judgments, traffic tickets, and a lot more. The exception would be any convictions that were sealed by the court.
And that's honestly a small price to pay.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, with all the info, you could tell if the person you're dating has or had a problem with alcohol, money, violence, or anger. I mean, that's food for a second thought, to be sure.
Absolutely. It could be invaluable, I think. Anyway, we'll put that link in our show notes. You just have to remember that you put in your state. All right. So, you know, we've talked about how the men who are targeted by domineering and abusive women are nice. They are just really good, decent, loving men. And that was David Edwards. It was said in an article in TheGuardian.com that he was a highly valued member of the community with a good reputation of integrity. He was said to be, quote, an engaging person with a wry grin, end quote. In stark contrast, Sharon was a violent bully. In fact, the criminal attorney called it forceful bullying. She had a history of violent attacks and was the mother of four very unfortunate children, in my opinion, and the first of whom she had at the age of 16. Even during their courtship, Sharon regularly beat and belittled David. She wore the pants and she controlled the show. She resented David's family and friends and sought to isolate him. She wanted 100% of his attention and relentlessly bugged him at work. She even called him at work screaming, quote, what sort of fucking man are you, end quote. David's friends and coworkers noticed that after starting to date Sharon, his appearance declined, along with his professionalism and self-respect. He would arrive at work disheveled and bruised, plus he was losing a lot of weight. His clothes were just hanging on him. In the beginning, he caved to Sharon's demands that he cover up her abuse. There was a recording of David speaking to Sharon saying, we are going to have to refine the excuse for my eye. You know, the garage door that we made up? That doesn't wash, end quote. He minimized his distress and said the injuries were from falls or carelessness and still claimed a love bond with his wife while showing up to work with scratches and bite marks.
That just makes me so sad that his mind goes to, how can we help cover this up?
I know.
You know, how do you pass off a bite mark as being from anything other than another person?
Dog? I don't know.
I think that's very distinct.
Yeah, I have actually seen human bite marks and you can tell, unfortunately. As time wore on, Sharon wore him down further. He stopped caring about appearances. He told at least 11 people that he was being abused by Sharon. He told one colleague that she was a complete nightmare who was bleeding him dry. He told his former partner, Deborah Livesley, quote, my life is hell down here. I'm living in hell, end quote. She told him to get out of the relationship, kick her out or get out. He replied, trust me, I can't. With unfortunate premonition, Deborah said, quote, if you don't, she is going to end up killing you, end quote. A coworker noticed part of David's ear missing and teeth marks on it one day.
I'm sorry, did you say an ear missing?
Yes. Another time, David told her that Sharon had picked up a glass coffee table and hit him over the head with it. She must be like the female Hulk.
It's almost incredible how table. And I, you know what I really think? I think these women really do get that angry, which is no excuse. There's no excuse to get that angry.
But then they have adrenaline, yes, which makes
it's
them
like
stronger.
Superhuman.
Yeah.
I mean, to rip off a man's ear
ew. That just, ew. No. David would claim Sharon could knock him out with one punch. Christopher Hall, a former colleague, begged David to flee to his parents' house to be by himself where he could think. But David listened with, literally and figuratively, half an ear, saying that Sharon wouldn't let him. Even after Sharon's daughter called the police on her own mother after a violent attack, there were no charges brought against her. 2 months into the marriage, David's firm was taken over by another. His position was redundant and he lost his job, and Sharon was pissed. There goes the money.
Poor guy. It's not even his fault.
I know. She had just married, all of this, and she was always impeccably dressed and had been taken on frequent vacations, always had her hair and nails professionally done, and she liked fine jewelry. Now she stood to lose everything. Her gold-digging hands were wrapped so tightly around. She started calling David a has-been in front of strangers. Her violent and physical abuse of David became even more forceful. She knew he would never fight back or call the police, so she really had nothing holding her back. No fear of getting caught, no fear that he would retaliate. He was just nice.
Too nice.
Nice and protective. August 22nd, the couple returned from an all-expenses-paid vacation to Mallorca. Sharon bought 4 bottles of wine that evening, which in all likelihood she drank quite a bit of. Knowing her lavish lifestyle was coming to an end enraged her. She laid into David, and in the heat of the argument, she stabbed him in the chest and leg. Sharon's 19-year-old daughter found David lying in the bathroom bleeding. Upon confronting her mother, Sharon insisted she didn't mean to hurt him.
Okay, maybe you could pass off, I don't know, the first stab as I didn't mean to hurt him. Unlikely, but I'm giving
her... No, it was an accident.
Yeah, the benefit of the doubt. Yeah. Let's just do that. But when you stab him again, that's intent to harm.
Absolutely. And incredulously, later that evening, the couple went out to a local pub together.
After his wounds?
After he was stabbed in the leg and the chest. Witnesses saw David bleeding from injuries to his chest and head, while Sharon remained, quote, drunkenly and callously unconcerned, end quote, about the fact that her husband was bleeding. Sharon just continued to argue with David, and a police officer saw her screaming at him in the street once they left the pub. The officer asked Sharon to calm down. His body camera recorded Sharon telling David, quote, I'm going to fucking kill ya. I swear, David, when I wake up tomorrow, I don't know what mood I'm going to be in, end quote. The next day, the argument continued. Sharon tore up all their wedding photos, apparently so over the richer for poorer part and ready to move on to the death do them part. She then stabbed David in the heart with a 13-inch kitchen knife. During her trial, Sharon claimed that David begged her not to call an ambulance, that they cleaned up the blood together before proceeding to have sex. Then she fell asleep on the couch.
Oh, come on.
I know.
He's seriously going to have sex after being stabbed in the heart? Is that even physically possible? How stupid does she think we are?
It's ridiculous. The knife wound to the heart was the kill shot. And upon autopsy, his body bore witness to a regular diet of battery and abuse. There were at least 60 external injuries with cuts and slashes making up half of them. He had been stabbed in the thigh, the knee, the finger, and head.
So are we assuming he had been stabbed throughout the whole night, or are these wounds that healed over time? And
they were over time, right?
Oh, okay.
So it was yesterday and today, but there was older wounds that
were healing
showed
he had been cut before.
Yes, a process of abuse that's been going on for a while.
History of violence.
Yes. Sharon was arrested and charged with murder. Strangely, she kept talking about David in the present tense and telling authorities that he was not dead. At trial, she showed a part of their wedding video where she called David her soulmate and her true love. Sharon denied her guilt, insisting she didn't even like knives because her son had once held a knife to her throat. So why would she use one as a weapon?
Okay. If that's true, I have to wonder if she abused her son as well.
I thought the same
thing. And he finally just had enough.
Right.
Or was it just a really warped family tree that they had, which also sounds very plausible.
I don't know the history, but I'm 100% team son at this point. Go get her. And I bet that former partner, Pritchard, that she accused of abusing her was really the abused one.
Oh, definitely.
If he was the father of one of any of her kids, my bet is, you know, she was using it as a parent alienation technique by accusing him of abuse.
Oh, to be sure, I would love to get a transcript of that trial.
Mm-hmm.
Did David, as Pritchard's defense attorney, not see or hear anything at the trial that caused him to be so wary of Sharon? It seems very unlikely.
It really does. I mean, if he was cross-examining her and defending her then partner, it seems like a lot of stuff would have come out in that trial that pointed to her as a horrible person.
But maybe he didn't believe it. Who knows?
I don't know. As a last-ditch, desperate attempt to reduce any sentencing, Sharon claimed that David spiked her wine that night with diazepam.
Well, that's more stupidity on her part. Diazepam is a muscle relaxant, and it makes you sleepy, not in the mood for murder.
I know.
If anything, it would have made her weak and lethargic. As a criminal, Sharon really sucks.
She does. And as a human.
Definitely. And as a wife.
Exactly.
No. And as a mother.
No one in the courtroom was buying it either. A recording was played at trial of David saying to Sharon, "Honey, you said to me, I'd like to think that I could punch you and knock you out with a single punch, right? I've told you, you do punch rather hard, don't you?" End quote. It was brought out at trial that Sharon had broken his collarbone previously, bitten his nose and his ear, among other atrocities.
So, with all these recordings, it does sound like David was doing some documentation.
Right. Yeah.
Like we try to drill home every episode. Mm-hmm. It may have not saved his life, but it sure helped get Sharon convicted.
Definitely. Justice William Davis of Manchester Crown Court convicted Sharon of murder and sentenced her to life in prison with a minimum of 20 years in jail after a unanimous jury said, yep, she's guilty as hell. Sharon showed absolutely no emotion when the verdict was delivered or when she was let out of the courtroom. According to the Manchester Evening News, Sharon tried to get her conviction overturned by claiming that, yes, she was holding the knife, but David walked into it.
Sharon is off her rocker.
She's nuts.
David was stabbed in the heart. Sharon, being quite a bit shorter based on their wedding photos, would have had to have the knife raised to her own chest height for him to walk into it. And sorry, he'd have to run into the knife in order for it to penetrate that deeply before realization hit that he had bumped into something sharp and should stop.
Right.
The knife went 3 inches.
Yeah.
And not to mention, she'd cut him up earlier before stabbing him in the heart.
Exactly. It wasn't the only wound. What about the one to the leg? What about the one to the finger and the head? You know,
the others.
When they went to the bar, somebody said he was bleeding from the head. It was a ridiculous notion, which 3 senior judges completely rejected, saying, quote, "There is no merit whatsoever to the grounds of appeal, which she has advanced, and we refuse to leave appeal," end quote.
Good.
An article in BBC.com News said that doctors and authorities both let David down prior to his murder. 2 general practitioners and the emergency unit at Chorley Hospital failed to raise any warning flags of concern about his numerous injuries, and the police were not called. David even told a paramedic about his abuse, and they did not follow procedure, which would have been to report it to their managers. The article did say that since the murder, Lancashire Teaching Hospital and Chorley have since trained or reviewed staff on domestic abuse so that they know it's not a gender issue. Both men and women are targeted and abused.
It always seems too little too late.
I know, but better little than none. I mean, I'm with you. I want to take a big bite out of domestic crime, not take baby steps. However, it should be noted that when Sharon's daughter called the police after one of her mom's violent attacks on David, he refused to give a statement or press charges, and Sharon refused to answer any questions. So really, there was nothing the police could do, you know, on that score. Mark Brooks, chairman of the domestic violence charity Mankind Initiative, said, quote, "It is vital that men in these abusive relationships seek help from the police, call helplines, and speak to those they trust. A decade or so ago, men may have struggled with being believed, but that is not the case now. There is real help out there," end quote. When David sought medical attention for his injuries, Sharon would turn from Jekyll to Hyde, putting on a show of love and devotion and care. And this may have made it less likely that the doctors would look at her as a perpetrator. But all of us need to remember what liars and shapeshifters narcissists are. Doctors and caregivers need to be more conscientious about a pattern of injury. Also at trial, it was heard that David did tell a doctor and a nurse that Sharon beat him regularly.
Yeah, the reports are kind of conflicting. He told some, he hid some, he told some truth, he told some cover-ups. So I'm not sure where fault should lie, except it definitely with Sharon.
Yeah.
It's still just a tragic incident any way you look at it.
Well, to some degree, things in the UK are changing thanks to men who do report their abuse. Women convicted for domestic violence rose by 30% in 2015, 6 times higher than it was in 2005. That rate just keeps going up. Mark Brooks of the Mankind Initiative says that increase is due to better reporting, police believing those reports, and police now more willing and able to prosecute women.
You know, I'm finding that the sensational nature of domestic abuse means that the physical violence is what's highlighted in the news. But it's the day-to-day belittling, coercing, and controlling that I really want to understand and put under a microscope. That's what excites me about season two. It's so much more about that side of abuse.
Right. It's like these things hit the news only after some tragic or physical maiming or death. But the coercive control and the emotional abuse are said to be so terrible, and they are part of 95% of domestic violence situations.
You know what? I really believe that some people wouldn't even consider that abuse. No. That they're so, it's so ingrained in their everyday life. They don't see it as abuse.
And you have to wonder how much they even realize they're being controlled.
Yeah.
An article on Agriland stated, quote, coercive control is the most invisible, silent form of behavior that someone is doing on purpose. What he or she is doing is messing with your mind, essentially. You're walking on eggshells. The person is making your world really, really small. Isolation is a huge factor of coercive control, end quote. It is said that the target is in a fog of abuse. There's no physical injury to show it. The article is primarily talking about farmers because that's who their site caters to. But Catherine Bentley, CEO of Men's Aid, a service in Ireland, said that the number of older men, especially farmers, has drastically increased in the last 18 months to the point where it is, quote, quite shocking, scary, and concerning, end quote.
Men's Aid expects to support approximately 8,000 men this year.
Wow.
When you contact their service, they walk beside you, believing you, encouraging you, helping you with strategies to come and to escape. They are always on the other end of the phone or can meet with you one-on-one. They try to instill the message that getting help is a sign of strength. We have the link to their service on our website under gethelp-ireland.
I think one of the things we really want to drive home is that physical abuse is not the only kind. Men in particular do not associate control and manipulation with the word abuse, so they don't even think to report it. They just endure until they can't. With coercive control, often your every move is tracked, their phones are monitored, their computers. Nothing is sacred, and the controller keeps them isolated and completely under thumb. It would be hard in any situation to ever be able to reach out for help. That's why Men's Aid says it is so important to open a conversation with someone you're concerned about, someone you suspect is being abused or has gone off the grid, used to talk to you all the time, and now you never hear from them again. If you have the opportunity, do it. Bentley says, quote, once you reach out to someone and leave that door open for them, it has the potential to be a lifeline during a really terrifying time. You will change lives and you will save lives, end quote. So there you go, ISOs. Let's save some lives. As always, we pray for your welfare and healing. Until next time, be safe, be smart, and survive.
If you or someone you love is being abused by an intimate partner, we have resources listed on our website at isolatedpodcast.com. If you have an experience, expertise, or advice you'd like to share, please send an email to notalone@isolatedpodcast.com or visit our website. Your privacy, should you desire it, is a top priority for us. You can support the work of this podcast and help fund much-needed therapy for men who can't afford it by becoming a member through our Patreon page at patreon.com/isolatedpodcast, which also gets you perks and benefits unavailable to non-members. You can cancel at any time. Your 5-star review on iTunes will also help promote the show and help listeners find the podcast. Thank you so much for your support.